Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. You're listening live with Calling All Leaders and Healers with host Barbara White. Barbara White is a gifted intuitive, holistic therapist, and spiritual teacher. She is the creator of the self-acceptance process and has a master's in transpersonal psychology and eco-psychology, a diploma of homeopathy, and is a published author. Called the Midwife to the Soul, Barbara has ignited hundreds into knowing their inherent worth and facilitated the birth of their innate gifts. Barbara is the owner of the Accepted As I Am Center, certified in advanced auricular medicine, Shambhala Master, Reiki Master, Qigong Practitioner, and is a black belt in Isshinryu Karate. Her books, Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful and Self-Acceptance Process and Magnificent You, are available on Amazon. Barbara's drive and passion to teach comes from knowing that if someone is willing to look within and grow, they can be a healer and leader to others. And now I welcome your host, Barbara White.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening to Calling All Leaders and Healers, knowing that as you love all parts of yourself, not just the light parts of self, but the dark and the light, that you embrace all parts of you, that you can not only realize love, beauty, joy as you, but be a influence to others in your presence, in your actions, and in your daily living. Today, I am honored and joyful to host Andrew Harvey, who has been an inspiration to me for many years. There's so many things that his work that is I'm so excited to talk to him about, and really just tickled pink to be talking to him because there's so much about his work. I've read just a few of his books, and they're all so life-changing and so powerful. The Hope is the one that was my first, and that was through Naropa University. And that book is, even though it was not, I think it was published a few years ago, that if you have not read The Hope by Andrew Harvey, that one is so appropriate for our times right now, that really seeing how, what is happening, that this death that's happening, and there's actually a birth happening, and there's a incredible new paradigm that's really seeking to be born in on the planet, in as and through you, through me, and that it is very important and very possible. And I'm recently reading Radical Passion, which I can't wait to talk to him about as well, and that book is the passion is I say when you begin to hear Andrew Harvey today, you're going to, if you're not inspired and get a little fire up your bum, then he has such a passion and potent energy in his words and in his speaking that I know you're going to really enjoy my guest. So let me introduce him. Andrew Harvey is an internationally acclaimed poet, novelist, translator, mystical scholar, and spiritual teacher. He was born in South India in 1952, moved to England at the age 9, and later attended Oxford University, where in 1973 he became a fellow of All Souls College. In 1977, he returned to India for the first time since his childhood and underwent several mystical experiences, which began a series of initiations into different mystical traditions to learn their secrets and practices. Harvey has taught at Oxford University, Cornell University, Hobart and William Smith Colleges, the California Institute of Integral Studies, and the University of Creation Spirituality, now Wisdom University. As well as various churches, spiritual centers throughout the United States, England, and Europe. He is the author of more, and I think he's up to 40 books. This is 25 books, so this bio, I think, is not essentially current, but here's some of them. The Son of Man, The Direct Path, Hidden Journey, The Way of Passion, A Celebration of Rumi, The Return to the Mother, Sun at Midnight, and there's just a few. Harvey was subject of the 1993 BBC documentary, The Making of the Modern Mystic, and has appeared in several others, including Rumi, Turning Ecstatic, The Return of Rumi, The Consciousness of Christ, and a documentary on the life and the work of Marianne Woodman. His own 90-minute documentary, Sacred Activism, was produced by the Hartley Film Foundation in 2005. Several of his lectures are available on www.mysss.com and on YouTube. And if you haven't heard some of his lectures, please treat yourself to that. He is a founder and director of the Institute for Sacred Activism in Oak Park, Illinois, is where he lives. And Andrew's website and information is andrewharvey.net. I'm sure there'll be more ways that you can connect into his work. And without any further delay, I'd like to welcome Andrew.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. Very embarrassing, but very sweet. Thank you.
Isn't it? I can totally relate when you start hearing the bio, and it's like,
well, it's always so exhausting to hear your bio. I mean, I'm 64, so I think, my God, well, I did do something, thank God.
You've written like 40 books now, right?
Yes, about that. Yeah, I feel more creative than ever, actually, because, as you said, these times are appalling and the shadow is out everywhere. But for me, there's a tremendous opportunity in the rise of the shadow, because now we see what we're up against in ourselves and in the world. And now is the time to birth a worldwide movement of love in action, a peaceful revolution of love and wisdom in action that is sacred activism. This is the time. We must do it now, and we can do it now. And there are marvelous people in place, like Bernie Sanders and a whole host of others, who are really inspiring us and showing us the way. Standing Rock has been such an example of how to resist with such sacred purpose and generosity and peacefulness. And look at the fact that the veterans turned up to protect the whole shebang. That was an amazing thing. So people must not lose hope now. It's time to cultivate deep spiritual practice and to step up as a sacred activist and really do the work. This is the challenge.
I love that veterans showed up. I wasn't aware of that. And,
yes.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing, I think, about Standing Rock, is that a group of young veterans, and these are guys in their 30s who've been in Iraq and Afghanistan, just said, look, we've been fighting meaningless wars. This is a real war for the future. This is a war for water, the war for the sustaining of life, and we're going to turn up and protect these guys. So they turned up, and they said, well, you've got to shoot us first. Basically, in fact, one of them, a 32-year-old veteran, said, look, I've been fighting meaningless wars for fat people with immense amounts of money. Now I'm going to risk my life for something that really matters, the future of my children. That is astounding, and it shows the power of nonviolent moral spiritual resistance. So nobody out there listening should doubt, given Standing Rock, that real peaceful revolution is possible if you're brave enough. And the way to become brave enough is to ground yourself in deep spiritual practice that will give you an understanding of your own divine nature and of the enormous courage and joy and strength that are part of that nature. We don't have to rely on outer things. We've got a whole inner arsenal of powers that we aren't using at the moment. We've got the divine behind us in our quest to preserve the world. And that is a whole invisible army of angels and bodhisattvas and all kinds of beings who are here to help. This is not a time to lose hope and wallow in despair. This is a time to arm ourselves with the truth of sacred practice and the great truth, sacred mission born out of one's deepest love for the world.
I love how
praise
you're saying,
the Lord.
Arm yourself with spiritual practice. That it's so important to be able to look at the perceived darkness within oneself and be able to hold space within our own being in an embodied way for all of that, so that we can look out into the world and be able to hold space for that and be able to not get so caught up into it and feel like you're a jumping bean to everything that's going on around you.
Well, you've hit on something extremely important. It's very important not to demonize Mr. Trump and his plutocrats. It's very important to realize that we all have an inner Trump, and we all have greed, and we all have meanness of spirit. That doesn't mean that we excuse what they do, and it doesn't mean that we're not vigilant, and that doesn't mean that we're not discerning, and that doesn't mean that we don't resist. But what it does mean is that we don't proceed with hatred and separation. We proceed with very conscious love, very conscious forgiveness, but very conscious resistance. That's how it's done. That's how Gandhi did it. That's how Martin Luther King did it. That's how the Dalai Lama does it. That's how these great shifts take place. They don't take place just from demonizing and blaming and shaming. They take place from deep spiritual principles that are incarnated in action that says a great yes to a new vision and a great no to the betrayals of that vision. This is important because I think a lot of people are scared of activism because they associate it with violence or blaming and shaming. That's not activism. That's just anger, uncontrolled anger in expression. Real sacred activism is grounded in sacred consciousness, is grounded in shadow work, is grounded in compassion. But that doesn't mean that it's weak. It's very, very strong because it's grounded in what Gandhi called soul force. And with that grounding in soul force and that grounding in sacred practice and that grounding in a passionate and beautiful and holy vision of what the world could be if we lived in interdependence, if we lived in love, if we lived in justice, with that vision, then we can truly inspire others to change too.
I noticed your use of the word grounded three times, and I have an incredible interest with that. One of my masters was on intimacy with the body leads to intimacy with the earth. And
I
like your term and the hope, the bliss bunnies and the... could you speak on how there's a disassociation or an obsession with being positive and how people... fierce love and activism, but confuse that with this disassociation.
Absolutely. Well, I think you know my position on the New Age, which is that it hasn't been a New Age, and it has been a kind of disaster because it just promoted pathological narcissism and a coma of denial about the really terrifying problems that are threatening now the life of humanity. Being positive is not only looking at the light. The real hope is born on the other side of despair. The real positive force is engendered from the ashes of the false self. The real joy is found when you've exhausted illusion. So the dark has tremendous lessons to teach us, not only about ourselves, but also about the nature of humanity, about the nature of the universe. And without that priceless knowledge that only looking at the dark can give us, we really roam around as bliss bunnies, posing no threat whatsoever to the systems of cold evil that are now threatening the very future of the human race. I hope I put it strongly enough.
Yeah, I love that emphasis is, I hope I put it strongly enough, that there is a difference between the being positive, the bliss bunny, which versus coming from that knowing, that fierce loving, as you call it, that
Just look around at the world. Look around at the real world, not at this privileged coma world that the New Age talks about. Look at someone like Desmond Tutu. If you've ever had the luck to be anywhere near Desmond Tutu, you're near a bonfire of joy and purpose and meaning. Mm-hmm. That man has been through more horror, more terror, more violence than anybody you could possibly imagine. And he hasn't lost his joy. He is supremely positive, but his positivity is grounded in a realistic vision of human beings and a real experience of tragedy. That's the only kind of positivity we should be aiming for now when we're facing disaster after disaster. If we don't get to that real joy, we won't be able to be strong enough to deal with what we have to deal with. That's why I've just published a book, actually, called Return to Joy, which I wrote with my great friend Carolyn Baker. It's a short book. It's available on Amazon, and it's really one of the things I'm proudest of, because Carolyn and I got together and said, look, we've been investigating all the pain and the difficulties that the world is facing, and we're joyful. We've never felt more happy, more concentrated, more focused, more alive. We must try and help others to get to this radical joy so that they can feel in the middle of all of this chaos and madness the source of their real being, the source of the divine consciousness within. So that's what we dedicated the book to. And it's a book in which I think everybody who has a real will to discover joy will find all kinds of ways to help them. So I'm very proud of this book, and I hope that people listening will be inspired to order it. We've self-published it because we're fed up with the ways in which publishers work to take all the money and not do any of the work. So we decided to do all the work and take some of the money and dedicate other parts of the money to helping homeless and other causes. So please, please avail yourself of this resource.
Yeah, Return to Joy. I just started that book, and it's definitely a different size than your 600-page Radical Passion book. It's very inviting and yet holds the same incredible messages, and it really hones the point that joy is possible, and that not to be afraid of the human experience, but to really embrace it, and that
joy is possible, joy is the essential nature of our nature. Joy is the great essence of God. The Hindus call God Sat-Chit-Ananda, being, awareness, bliss, Ananda. But the bliss is the most sacred and glorious part of the God consciousness. And anybody who's ever had even a fringe of a real mystical experience knows that they're coming in connection with this vast creative love that is creating everything in outrageous, playful, tender, wild bliss. And it's connecting with that and realizing that that lives in you as your essential nature that absolutely transforms life and fills you with godly chutzpah.
It's interesting how you and I have similar journeys. Not to the, I wouldn't say the same, of course, the details. There's some pieces that are similar, but my hero and mentor also told me I was going to hell for being bisexual, and
really?
That cracked me.
I'm going to. I'm so happy I'll see somebody I know there and like, because this is such horseshit, isn't it?
We'll be in hell together.
How can we, at this time in the history of the world, even begin to listen to such rubbish without screaming with laughter?
Yeah, it was,
really think that God spends God's time worrying about what we do in our bedrooms when we love someone else? This is, even Joe Biden, and I love Joe Biden, said the other day on TV, God, it's just a question of who do you love? Here's a completely straight, old-fashioned guy saying, it's a no-brainer. Let's get over all of this. Even Trump has decided that gay marriage is something that's going to stay. God bless him. That's the one positive thing I've heard him say. So I'm clinging to it like a drowning man to a raft.
It seems to me, too, that this joy that is available and we're able to open to, it's going to bring up, I mean, it's almost like when people open up the valve, it's going to bring up unresolved grief, or it's going to bring up, and it seems like in my experience in working with people in sessions for the last 20 years, that's sometimes confusing for them because they're going towards joy,
yes.
But it's...
But aren't we really talking about opening up our capacity for feeling in general? The truth is you can't feel greater joy at the core of your life if you're also not receptive to the heartbreak and the trauma that you most often we're repressing. So the secret is to strengthen your sacred heart by deep practice so that you can become spacious and strong enough to be able to stand both the pain and the real wild joy of living so that you become truly, truly alive. And from that true aliveness, miracles dance. It's absolutely amazing what a truly alive person focused on a sacred mission can accomplish. I've seen it thousands of times. And this is the life that we're being called to at this moment. This moment is what I would call a Kali event. It's a moment in which the dark, feminine, creative, destructive force is dancing with tremendous ruthlessness because it has decided that we will either evolve or die out. It has decided that we will either burn away the illusions that are now creating these systems of cold evil that are threatening the life not only of our own species but of all of the other species on Earth. And it has decided that the time is now. It's quite obvious that if we don't make major shifts on every level in our world, we are going to, at best, have in 50 years a staggered remnant of a humanity crawling about in a half-dismembered world. So let's get real about what the challenge of our time is. The challenge isn't just to have a spiritual practice and indulge in glorious mystical experiences and read wonderful books and talk to our friends about how spiritual we are. The challenge is to really go deep, to discover the divine self, and then to act from that with others, to create together a new world. That's the challenge. And it's a very powerful challenge, and it's a challenge that if we don't rise to, in millions of us, we're going to give to our children a completely destroyed world in which the whole prospect of life might be, will be, savagely diminished. That's where we are.
You use the term sacred heart, that people return to their sacred heart. What is the sacred heart?
The sacred heart is the heart center, which is slightly to the right of the chest, on the same level as the physical heart. This is a spiritual center. Just as the body has certain crucial centers, the physical body, so the psycho-spiritual body, as all the mystical traditions know, have these centers, which in Hinduism are called chakras. The most important center is the heart center, because when through devotion and through adoration and through prayer and through meditation and through letting out your longing to be one with the one, that center opens, what will happen in you is that you will be possessed by a fire of profound compassion for all beings and all things. And it's that that I call the sacred heart.
Longing to be one with the one.
That's
who do you
the,
consider? Go ahead.
That's the Rumi says that that's the deepest longing in every human being, and letting out that longing is the bravest thing we do, because it's like letting out a fire that will eventually burn down the house of our false self, which separates us. Because what happens when you let out that longing to be one with the one, that longing to discover your essential identity, what happens is that it takes you by its passion and through all kinds of revelatory and dangerous and wild and sometimes extremely painful experiences, which open your heart immeasurably and make your heart a sacred heart that is fiery with love for the whole creation, with fiery with love for compassion, and fiery with love for justice.
I like to call that the longing to be one with the one. I call that being a maniac for God, or really willing to be a fool for love, or that just willing to be a maniac, that I'll do anything to be able to really come from the core of my being and say, use me. And yes, when people are in that space, miracles do occur. That's where that willingness and that openness and that availability.
And that surrender, it really is surrender. This is one of the reasons I love Islamic mysticism so much, because at the core of Islam, and Islam itself means surrender, is this vision of the absolute magnificence and power of God and the glorious power that can flow through a human being when that human being is completely surrendered to his or her own unity with God and also to the will of God for his or her life. And it's an experience that I have continually, and I'm sure you do, that when you truly give up your own agenda and just say, like Jesus, not my will, but your will, and do the practices, you find yourself being moved in the most extraordinary way, and you find that the power and the grace to enact what you're given to do arrives miraculously, sometimes at 1 minute to midnight, and quite often at 1 minute to midnight, but always arrives. This is an experience that mystics throughout history have had, and it's an experience now that millions and millions of people must have so that we can come together to do the tremendously difficult work that now faces us as a human race. That's what all of my work is dedicated to helping people to see three things, to really understand that all of the mystical traditions agree on one very important thing, which is that we all have original blessing, the original blessing of divine consciousness. To understand that the divine is not only being, is not only peace and serenity and joy, it's also passion for justice, it's also passion for transformation of real conditions in the real world. And then to understand that we're here, as the Dalai Lama once said to me, we're here to embody the transcendent, which means living the light in our minds, living the light in our open hearts, living the light in the conscious, awakened selves of our sacred bodies. And so coming into a unity with the light in matter, and so being empowered at a much greater level than most people can even begin to imagine, with the kind of passion and wisdom and clarity and stamina and power that we're going to need to go forward and become sacred activists and really use the terror and darkness and chaos of this situation as a way of helping people wake up and then empowering them to change everything to reflect the true mind of the Father Mother, the mind of love and justice.
So when you hear the statement, and so I see people that are like, they'll hear you saying, they'll hear that statement from you to say that you're here, do what you're here to do. And people are waiting for their purpose or their mission almost to be delivered to them in FedEx, or they're asking that
this
question.
This is spiritual laziness at the time like this. What more do you need, for God's sake, to see that the world is in extreme danger and that it requires all of us to step up together? It's obvious now. When I wrote The Hope, which was published, I think, 6 years ago, there was a very good reaction. People really began to think about sacred activism, to talk about sacred activism. Sacred activism became the buzzword in the spiritual world. But I went around for 6 years trying to beg people to get going, not just read the book, but use the book. And now, as the shadow has appeared in all of its virulence and cruelty and madness, threatening really the future of the planet, because, as we all know, our president-elect has appointed 4 climate deniers to the cabinet, which means almost certainly that the Paris Accords will be rolled back, and means that at the moment when the climate scientists are telling us we're approaching a moment of enormous danger, after which there will be no way of stopping climate collapse, we have in place in the most powerful country in the world a government that potentially not only does nothing about climate change, but actually reverses the kinds of small protections and inadequate protections that have been put in place in the first place. This is a terrible situation, but the great advantage of this situation is that when you really see what is being threatened, the whole future of the human race, then your last resistance is to actually getting real about putting love into action will go. And so I'm very hopeful that the moment for a worldwide revolution of love in action has arrived, and that there are millions of people who are waking up, and that this will take place, because the prospect of it not taking place is really the prospect of us ending in a disgraceful collapse of our own making.
So it just switching gears for one moment.
Absolutely.
People that maybe are new to you and can hear the accuracy, power, energy of your message. There's so many. It's almost hard to ask this question. But who would you consider your greatest teacher?
Well, I've had the grace, my friends, of being taught by 3 great saints, and I use the word very sparingly. I was taught when I was in my late 20s and early 30s by a great Tibetan master, Tukse Rinpoche, in the Himalayas in Ladakh. I was taught by the greatest Christian mystic of the 20th century, who became my heart's beloved, Father Bede Griffiths, who really gave me the map for this time when he told me that the human race has three alternatives now: to go on in its fantasy of power and be annihilated, to fall on its knees, seeing what it knows, and beg for redemption, which it's not going to do, obviously, and thirdly, to go through a massive global dark night, which will look like the end, but not be the end, because, as mystics know, in all of the major authentic systems, you go through a death of everything that you think you know about yourself, about reality, to be reborn in a much higher level of consciousness. And Big said to me, look, this is what is going to happen. This was in 1993, and it's going to happen within the next 20 years. And his accuracy is astonishing. And my third teacher was, and is, the Dalai Lama, who for me exemplifies everything that I'm trying to convey in sacred activism, exemplifies living a life of absolute holy truth and love and compassion and joy, but a life dedicated to helping others and to standing up for the oppressed and to standing up for the environment and to standing up for justice in all of its different forms in the world. But the greatest teacher for me was not in a body, is not in a body, and it is the Christ. And my whole life changed, and sacred activism was born when I went to be with my father, who was dying, in the place that I was born, in Coimbatore, India, in 1952. He was dying there, and we had the most extraordinary last week together, in which we shared everything, in which I really got to feel at the most primordial level his love for me. Mm-hmm. And during that week, in fact, on the Sunday, I arrived in India on Tuesday and went to church on the Sunday in a Catholic church, and I had there a vision, a direct vision of the risen Christ. A statue of the risen Christ in the church became alive, and he was blazing there, and fire from his chest boiled out and seemed to take a knife and open my heart. I nearly died of the pain and the ecstasy. And then from my heart to that heart, there was a stream of molten fire. And I realized that what was streaming from him with vast power also lived in me in very much different power, but same fire. And I was overwhelmed by bliss. But that was not the end of the experience, because when I went out of the church, I saw a beggar about 24, 25 years old, extraordinarily beautiful man, but with no arms and no legs, in a puddle, just derelict and lonely beyond imagining. And I went up to him and took him in my arms, looked into his eyes, and I saw the crucified Christ in him and was staggered and helped him up and got him to a place where he could be healed. But at that moment that I was lifting him, I heard a voice which was terrifying, a huge, thunderous voice. Nobody else seemed to hear it. And it said to me, you have been playing with light. You have been playing with your mystical experiences. Don't you understand that you've been given these experiences so that you can truly see that you are powered by the divine? Look around you. The world is burning to death in the fires of greed and ignorance. Your job is not to just write books about mysticism. Your job is to galvanize a worldwide revolution of love in action, because this is my will and this is the only way that the human race can ever save itself now. And that was a terrifying experience, because on the one hand, to receive so much ecstasy and then to be dragged by the Christ into the abyss of human suffering that is flaming all around us, and then to be told that it wasn't enough to be awake, you had to put that awakening into radical action for it to be truly effective in transforming the planet. And that experience changed everything. And that, I believe, is the essential message of the Christ consciousness to all of us, whatever our religion. Get down with your divine identity and get real about the work that it's sending you out to do, to co-create with God a new world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Woo. Yes, lay it on us. I should have been a black preacher. I would have had a lot more fun, actually, because I've had to restrain myself, because the New Age doesn't do passion. It does quiet-voiced serenity, which is, I think is very corrupt in this situation.
You're not speaking in a monotone, in an oatmeal kind of fashion.
Yes, and with that terrible glassy smile on your face. This isn't positivity or joy. It's psychosis. It's denial. Real joy is
it really is.
Experience of the pain of the world and the joy of God.
Mhm. Mhm. And in some ways it's so radical, but in such common sense, because you're just telling people, and it's what I tell people, and it's why I love your work. It's like you just get off your ass.
Yeah, the greatest ideas on every level are the simplest ones, aren't they? They're the most difficult, too, because they're real. Fantasy is always appealing. Magical thinking is always appealing because you don't actually have to risk anything or do anything or change your life. Well, that has nothing to do with either authentic mystical transformation or an authentic life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember when I read that story that you mentioned about the your heart being opened by Christ and how you realized that the light was just being used to soothe yourself, and what would your children say? What did you do while the world was burning? And
that's what he said. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you cross the waters of death,
you're
only going to be asked one question, which isn't, you know, how many books on mysticism did you write, or how convinced you were of your own wonderful spirituality. That's not going to be the question. The question is going to be, the voice was very insistent about this, what did you do while the world was burning? What did you do? Mm-hmm. What did you mm-hmm. care enough about to actually mm-hmm. risk something for? That's when you become real.
And it's people knowing that it's important to take those risks. It's important that I say that if you're not giving love, that doesn't feel like you're going to die. If you're not scared, if it's not scaring you on some level, then you're just staying in that comfort zone. You're just staying in that place of soothing yourself and not really taking those healthy risks to reach out and help in any way you can. And that.
If you're not really afraid of environmental collapse and the kind of social madness that would follow, that is following right now, you are mad. There is mm-hmm. that kind of fear is good. That kind of fear is essential. Mm-hmm. It mustn't paralyze you, but that's your responsibility. If you do the spiritual work that you're called to do, you won't be paralyzed by fear. You'll be energized and focused by fear. You'll realize, yes, we are in a potentially terminal situation. Yes, the world is being run by people who seem to be in a state of greedy, comatose denial. Yes, it looks very dark. Get going. And get going wisely and groundedly and passionately and calmly. Get going now. Without the fear, there is no urgency. And if we don't have urgency, either in our inner work or in the outer work born from that inner work, nothing can happen. You have to have a fire under the pot in which you're boiling to really melt all the vegetables in your nature together into one glorious divine soup.
So it's if someone does the inner work, they meditate every day, they commune with a spiritual community, they do the inner psychological work, they say to life, use me, I'm open, then it's really trusting what shows up and then acting on that which shows up, whatever's breaking their heart or whoever's in front of them to the serve. Is it that simple, or is there more to it?
I think there is more to it. I think that's certainly a wonderful beginning. But what I say to people is, look, you can wait if you want for your sacred mission to appear, but that's a very lazy way of doing it, and God might get bored with you, so your sacred mission will never appear. So what I suggest is that you speed the process up a bit. You take your life into your hands and you do the following practice. You get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sometime soon, you surround yourself with the peace and joy and protection of the divine, and then you ask yourself, you dare to ask yourself, one piercing question: what of all the causes in the world that I care about breaks my heart the most? If you really ask that question, you'll find that there are one or two causes that you hardly dare even think about because they cause you so much pain. Those are the ones that you are being challenged to really do something about. And when you discover what really breaks your heart and really rise to do something about it, you'll find, as all the great sacred activists have found, that you're fed not only the joy of God, because joy is rewarded to those who turn up in the great battle for the future, but also a tremendous source of passion energy, because at the core of heartbreak is this fountain of divine passion, as Rumi tells us, and as I've experienced, and so many other have experienced. And with that passion for you, your cause burning in you, you can go on suffering defeat after defeat after defeat and never get discouraged. This is the way of the active lover of God, and this is the way, I believe, that can truly help us go forward now.
So the your book, Return to Joy, is available on Amazon, and it's people are doing themselves
a huge
favor.
Well, I really hope that people... It's had the most incredible reaction. Mm-hmm. And I just love to read one thing that Matthew Fox, the greatest living theologian, wrote about it. He said, "There's much to get excited about in this book. The authors take up a most important topic, that of joy along with justice, that all truly characterizes an authentic spiritual path. I am reminded of Thomas Aquinas' teaching that joy is the human's noblest act and that God is supremely joyful and therefore supremely conscious. Yes, the stretching of our consciousness and the reaching of our next stage of evolution as a species depends on a far deeper immersion into joy, which, as the authors make clear, is distinct from happiness." So... and this book advances the in-depth journey into contemplation and action, mysticism and prophecy, the sacred activism that Earth and her creatures are asking of us all today. And it treats the needed shadow with frankness and common sense. So that's Matthew, and he never praises a book, so I was very, very happy that he celebrated this one. And it's an amazingly pragmatic guide. It's not a highfalutin book. I've written very grand mystical books because I love the higher heights of mystical truth and reality. But what I'm doing now is writing practical, grounded books with real advice and real ways of doing what, putting into action, inner and outer action, these great truths, because that's what I feel people now need. And that's why I'm writing short books, having written many long books, that can really be read by anybody who's got a heart full of goodwill and who's got a relatively clear mind, because that's, I think, what's needed now, is the essential truths made available in a pragmatic form for everybody so that everyone can be inspired and fired up and joyful and go forward knowing that the divine is behind them.
An army of the divine behind them, as you put it so well in the beginning, that there's
yes.
this incredible support and team that's there for us when we're moving forward with that sacred activism and that love and that fierce commitment to be used by creation. And you're it's just your work and your message and your it's the momentum of what you've been doing for at least 20 years now, 30 years, yes?
Yeah, God knows, yes, and I'm only 35.
God knows.
I started young,
lifetime.
Yeah.
It's so needed on the planet. It's so.
Well, it's not my own message. It's the message, I think, of all the responsible spiritual teachers on the planet. I was the first person to create this term, sacred activism. But the truth is that this is behind Marianne Williamson's work. It's behind the Dalai Lama's work. It's behind Jane Goodall's extraordinary work. It's the message, and it's being sounded in different ways and with different emphases by all those who truly see where we are. We don't have a hope to get through this by the old-fashioned activism that alienates people and so full of rage and unhealed anger and unhealed self-righteousness, and we don't have a hope of getting through this just as sitting on our futons. But the amazing truth is that if you combine the two greatest fires in the human soul, the fire of the passion for God with the fire of the passion for justice, those two fires create what I call a third fire that is love and wisdom in action. And this third fire has a nuclear power to transform terrible situations, and we've seen it transform terrible situations. We saw Gandhi unseat the British Empire through utilizing this third fire. We saw Martin Luther King avoid a huge bloodbath between blacks and whites in this country by his standing in the fire of Christ consciousness and emanating its wisdom. We've seen the Dalai Lama bring to the whole world a vision of interdependence and compassion for all beings because he stands as a flame of this fire. We've seen Jane Goodall for 30 years go all over the world tirelessly, spending 300 days on planes every single year, even in her 80s, to bring to the world a consciousness both about what's happening to the animals, the terrible genocide of the animals that's happening. By 2020, the World Wildlife Fund tells us there'll be only two-thirds of wildlife left on the planet, but also giving us visions of hope as to how to really deal with this situation and to turn up in this situation to do the best possible good. So we have examples of how this third fire transforms historical situations, and we have living, wonderful, holy examples of people who lit up with this fire, make 17-year-olds look slack because of the energy of love that burns in them and the energy of purpose. Why not be one of them? Why not turn up and let this fire possess you and go forward with it? Realize the truth of your incarnation. Realize the truth of the mission that's been born uniquely in your unique self, and go forward and have a hell and a heaven of a time putting it into action. That's the most wonderful life you could possibly have.
Yes, yes, I 100% agree. And that's that. Being an activist and not coming from fear, and being humble enough to know that you're not coming from fixing or fear, that you come from the first fire of the mystic, that love of yourself and others and the world and that connection, and then to take that love and then to put it in action in a way where you're not in that energy of I know better than you, or as you put it, the self-righteousness, and that marriage of the mystic and the activist, and how that that is also a thing that continues to evolve in people, because it's sometimes you think that you're serving and you're doing it out of love and you're actually doing it out of fear. Or sometimes you think that, I mean, I know I have, are times that I am in a state of bliss and love and think I'm taking as much action as I can. And then when I get honest with myself, I'm really not. So it, in my experience, it seems like the marriage continues, the marriage of the mystic and the activist continues to get stronger and stronger as I strengthen each side of that.
But you become more and more real. It will. It's
yeah.
As long as you remain in fantasy, nothing is going to happen. And those who think that mystical experience alone is enough are in a fantasy, which has nothing to do with authentic mystical experience, which is given to you to be fuel for your sacred active life, serving the great birth, serving the future. And until you fuse together your deepest spiritual understanding with your sacred mission in life, you'll never be able to experience the fullness of your being. You'll never live the life that you were assigned for, and you'll never know the great joy that comes to those who turn up in the great battle. And it is a battle. I use these military metaphors, and sometimes I get these wild emails saying, why do you use military metaphors? Well, the reason why I use them is because this is a ferocious situation, and it requires the kinds of virtues that have been traditionally called military and used for destruction to be used for creation. Those virtues are courage, stamina, nobility of nature, clarity, force, power, sacred power. This is the true sacred activist. We can't afford to imagine that just being peaceful and serene and saying a few mantras are going to be enough in a situation in which the whole future of nature, the whole future of the human race is threatened, and the possibility of a disgusting, new, postmodern, totally dominating fascism is being born right before our eyes. If you really love the poor, it's not enough to love the poor and give the odd $10. You really have to pledge yourself to ending the systems that keep a billion people living on less than a dollar a day, that keep people enslaved to poverty. What's love mean if it doesn't have a passion for justice in it? If you truly love animals, and I am a cat maniac and have a cat called Jade, who is now sitting in the sun, having jumped on me three times during the night, that naughty little thing, who she's my beloved. But if I really love Jade, I've got to really look at the ways in which her sisters and brothers, the lions and the tigers, are now being annihilated to provide bones that can be crushed to give some Vietnamese or Chinese politician an erection. I've got to look at the systems that are threatening the lives of the creatures that I love so much. If you really love young people, you're going to be absolutely terrified for them, for the debt that they have to incur for university education. It goes on and on. Love and justice come together. True love for the world is true love for justice, to see justice done, to see justice transform the unbelievable corruption of the economic system and the inequality of it, the unbelievable corruption of the elites that now dominate our political world, and the unbelievable of denial that is preventing a great many people from doing anything about what is the most serious evolutionary challenge that we've ever faced. So let's get real about love.
It's a lot of my clientele and students are, I'd say it's 70% are women, and I see one of the biggest thing of really taking action and really putting it out, like putting yourself out there, is that, and it sounds so basic, but it seems like one of the biggest barriers is approval. Like, people don't want to stick out. People don't want to.
No, for good reason.
I'm owning that. Like, I've had to clear layers on layers of not caring about people's opinions or needing approval. And I'm sure I have more layers to clear. I'm not saying that I'm perfect or anything.
Me too,
I'm just saying that. And so it just seems like you got to be able to be a rebel. You've got to be able to not care, what people think, or like, that's why I say be
You've
a maniac
got to be
for
brave.
God.
Brave. You've got to be brave. There's no. What is the whole spiritual path truly about? It's about building in yourself deathless courage, the courage to embrace your true divine self, and the courage to embrace the responsibilities of being divine. You don't just wake up one day and think, oh, I'm a part of God, and isn't this fun? That might last about 5 minutes, the bliss, but then God has a way of saying, well, you've filled with all of this bliss and joy and understanding given by me. What the hell are you going to do with it? How are you going to employ it? How are you going to use it in my great passion to see the poorhouse, to see women honored, to see gay people released from prejudice, to see the animals safe, to see nature protected? That's when you realize that to be a part of God means to really be a part of the divine, and the divine has two sides. I mean, it has millions of sides, but the two essential sides, it has a side of immense silence and fathomless peace and boundless transcendent light, which is infinitely greater than any of the universes that are created out of it. And then it has this other glorious mother side of wild, holy, active, creative compassion in action, which is what creates all of the universes, which is what engenders all of the processes of growth in the universe. And if you're going to be authentically one with the divine, you're going to be authentically one both with the great silence and peace and with the great creative passion for transformation on every level that is born out of the mother side of God. So that's what being a complete human being is, a being who lives like that. And we've seen that in the glorious beings who have really done that and given us that sign, especially in Jesus as I know him, not the Jesus of the churches, God help us, but the great pioneering evolutionary rebel of love in action that he truly was. You see it in the prophet, peace be upon him, who lived an astoundingly difficult but heroic and amazing life in which he helped a whole world come into far greater wisdom and unity with the divine, and the later perversions of Islam have nothing to do with the prophet. And we've seen it in amazing figures in our own time. Look at the Dalai Lama again. Here is somebody living out this life in the face of the whole world, which is why the whole world, apart from the Chinese, who consider him a baby-eating hyena, and I'm quoting, so accurate, apart from the whole world, the whole world is in love with him. So we know that this is the truth. We've seen it, and everybody who hears the truth of this clearly expressed knows that it is the truth. They might evade it because it's difficult, and they might want to suppress it because it really demands that they develop courage. But really, given the situation that we're in, what other kind of work is there now left us to do? This is our last hope, and it's our best hope. And if we work with this real challenge from the divine to go deep, to go further out, to go further in, to go further out in action, then amazing things could happen. If we don't wake up to this challenge, we are going to die out in unimaginable suffering. That's where we are. That's the challenge of our time. That's as clear as daylight to those who have the courage to see. And for my part, I find it thrilling to be born in a time like this, because it gives me the chance, despite my own fantasies and follies and craziness, which all of which are considerable, to become authentic. We've come to a time which forces those who see to become authentic in their search for authentic life. And that's a great, terrible, wonderful blessing.
Terrible, wonderful blessing to become authentic.
Yes.
As many things you have said, well said.
Thank you, Darcy. Well, it is a terrible thing to become authentic, because then you have to risk, as I've risked again and again, worlds that I loved having to leave them, because you do sometimes, by becoming yourself, alienate the people who say they're your friends, because they don't want to become themselves. They like you as you are, half authentic. But when you become really authentic and start truly causing radioactive trouble, they abandon you, because in a certain way the authenticity of your life shows a mirror to their own inauthenticity, and they can't stand it. So you have to be brave, and you have to be prepared for solitude sometimes. But if you're wise, you really start looking for your sacred companions, because they will be sent to you. There won't be many of them, but they'll be enough and of high quality enough to really give you courage and encouragement. And I always say to people, you know, the best thing that you could do for yourself is to create what I call a network of grace. Look around at your group of people and really identify the people with whose souls you're united, and start meeting together in groups of about 7 to 15, and start really talking about the state of the world, and start really encouraging each other to step up, and start encouraging each other when you do step up. Because this is a transformation that is very hard to do on your own, impossible, in fact. It can only be done in sacred friendship and sacred small community. So what I'd say to everybody listening, I know it's hard, and I know I'm asking you to become very brave and clear and forceful in your lives. Don't think you can't do this alone. don't think you have to do it alone. For one thing, God is behind you and you're never alone. And for another, if you really are humble enough to look and pray for sacred companions, they will be given to you, and join with them deeply, passionately, with great respect, and together go forward.
Wow. My being is ignited, my heart is filled, and thank you so much for your message. Thank you so much for doing your deep inner work and being willing to throw yourself in the fire and let the whole world watch you and be ignited
well, that's
by
the problem.
You. And
they've been watching. I don't want any more watching. I want everybody else to catch
exactly.
fire too. Watching has been a very big problem.
Yes, exactly. That they're not.
Right.
It's not about getting entertained. It's about.
I don't want to be an icon of your passion. I want you to discover your
exactly.
own unique passion.
Yeah.
I want to ignite
yeah.
by expressing my passion, your passion, and it'll look so different in other people. You know, one of the reasons why people get intimidated sometimes by the truly passionate sacred activists is that they believe that their sacred activism has to look like theirs.
Mm.
I will never be Jane Goodall, I'll never be the Dalai Lama, obviously, but I hope I'll be Andrew Harvey. My goal is to live Andrew's passion out in a holy way and dedicate it. What does your passion look like? It might be a very calm, quiet, private passion, but that doesn't mean it's not just as holy and as effective. My God, look at the nurses and hospitals that I've been treated in. I remember being in South Africa having had a gallbladder explode in the middle of the bush, which I wouldn't recommend to anybody.
Mm.
I was taken into this god-awful clinic, but it had the most amazing black nurses in it, these huge, gorgeous, tender, silent black women who just looked after me for 3 days without cease, and the love I felt from them was what enabled me to survive what would have, I think, otherwise have killed me. And it was one of the things that made me realize, my God, passion isn't just an expressive, wild, sacred fire emotion. It's also a soft ember glow in tireless, patient people. Look at these astounding doctors in Aleppo, these Syrian and foreign volunteers who are remaining in Aleppo to the very end, knowing perfectly well that that very end might mean their own annihilation. They have made a pledge to stay to the end, to be of whatever help they can be in these appalling circumstances. I saw a film of these amazing men and women yesterday night on TV, and they were all so calm, so gentle, so quiet-voiced, so obviously exhausted but purposeful. I just wanted to bow down to them, but I realized looking at them the truth of what I'm saying, because their passion isn't noisy and arm-waving and vibrant. Their passion is steady and calm and beautiful. So there are many ways of living this passion. Find yours and do it. And blaze with joy and annoy all the right people and gather to you all the most amazing people.
And it is so possible, not only possible, but it's what we're here to do. It's why we're here on the planet, and it's
there's
so many
reasons. Unless you do it. The truth is that
yeah.
you're not alive until you realize this.
Mm.
Any other life is really a form of death. There's a graffito in Oxford which said, why live if you can read, which is I always loved. And there's another one underneath it which said, is there life before death? Well, I sometimes wonder, looking at the kinds of lives that people choose, which are lives in which they use hardly any of their minds, a tenth of their hearts, don't pay any attention to their sacred bodies, and don't do work that comes from true creativity and love, and don't pledge themselves to do anything about a burning world. How could you possibly be said to be alive in those circumstances? I'm not being mean-spirited. I'm just saying, my God, when you've had the experience of becoming alive through the grace of the Beloved, it's such an astounding experience, and it changes you so much, and it gives you so much joy, and it gives you so much purpose, and it gives you so much energy, and it helps you realize your real purpose in the planet, and there's pain on the way, and there are defeats on the way, and people won't always love you on the way, and all the rest of it, but my God, the joy that you have, and the divine awareness that flows into you, and the courage that you feel, are worth a million sufferings. So this is what all of the saints and mystics of humanity have told us far more eloquently than I'm managing to. But if you can hear it, who are listening, and really, really take it in, you'll find that your true life is just beginning. And as it unfolds, as you take the journey into fusing together great mystical awareness and passion and peace with radical action of your life's purpose, then not only will you feel joy, you realize that you are the divine in a human form. You are the beloved's beloved. You are someone who humbly is turning up to serve the will of the Father Mother. And don't think the Father Mother won't reward you with enormous, enormous insights, revelations of the mysteries, deep feelings of rapture and gratitude and tremendous energy. So what are you waiting for?
Thank you so much for your message. We're towards the end of the time, and it's beyond words how touched I am inspired more to, it's like I already take so much love and action, but I want to do more, and I know that anyone that's listening is having that impact as well. And they
but
can
remember,
go to your website.
Remember, when you say that, darling, it's so important to say, yes, we all need to do more, but the truth is we can't do more unless we are more. So the foundation of doing more is taking much more seriously our spiritual practice and doing it incessantly in the core of your life, our lives, so that we can really expand our sense of who we are and who we truly are, so that from that place we can do far more and far better and far more effortlessly. That's the amazing thing. If you connect with this deep, sacred energy of being, you find that you're able to do far more with far less energy, and you do in such a way that it's far more effective, and you're not exhausted by it, you're exhilarated by it and energized by it. That's the difference between trying to rely on your own human consciousness and the difference of coming through the mystical grace of the beloved to rely on the beloved. Why put the socket of your plug of your life into a very faulty, narrow socket when you can plug it into the electricity that is actually creating the cosmos?
Yes. Yes, it reminds me of the quote from Mother Teresa that when she believed she was doing something, she was in trouble.
That's it. And you can't get to that place of surrender without the spiritual work. But once you do get to that, it's not you who's doing it. You're being done. But it's using your own unique capacities. That's what's so wonderful. So it satisfies your ego by really giving it the true position, which is that of the impassioned and adoring servant of the self. And it satisfies yourself because the self is radiating through all the actions. So it's a win-win. Obviously, it's God. God doesn't give us less. God gives us far more than we could ever imagine. If only we trust God and love God and do the great sacred practices that enable us to realize God.
Whew. All right, so I do have to conclude because I think the time at some point is going to run out on the show for the Body, Mind, Spirit guy, but I am so grateful. and I don't want to because I'm so grateful, so thankful for all that you've offered and all that you've taught, and thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank everybody who's listening. I love you, and don't think that I've mastered all of this. I'm not a guru. I'm just somebody on the path with everybody else, but sharing the things I've discovered, because these truths that I've tried to convey to you will help you immensely and will make you infinitely more powerful and joyful if you dare to grasp them. And why not dare to now? If not now, when?
Yes, yes, yes. Time is now, for sure. Whew. Thank you so much, Andrew. I so appreciate it.
Thank you.
Those who are listening, please go on to Andrew's website, andrewharvey.com, and please read the information and the videos he has there and the resources he has there. He also has some incredible lectures on YouTube as well that are ways to keep this message strong. I do ask you to be a messenger of love as well. Please pass on this information in the show to people. We know that Michigan, as well as all the areas that the show is reaching, really across the world, needs to hear this message and be inspired by it, that there is such a need for us to be doing the inner work and to be putting that inspired love, that inspired joy, that inspired realizations into action. And I don't know if you remember when he was talking, he was saying, so if you're asking right now, what can I do if you're feeling a little confused or a little, he talked about getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, surrounding yourself with things that inspire you, love you, that you feel protected by angels or nature or words, and then asking what breaks your heart, and what inspires you to go forward. And I've actually done that practice that he's mentioned before. And for me, it's animals. And I know that in every human that I help to inspire, to love, that it's helping them to go into action. And my work with animals is something that really continually breaks my heart, but also allows me to have that energy that he speaks of, that energy that you think crying for 2 hours about, more than 2 hours, last time my heart was broken open in the dairy farming, that would, I would be depressed the next day. But no, it was actually more joy and more inspiration to love people and for people to know how brilliant and amazing and wonderful they truly are, and that to bring that awareness into all that they say, all that they do, and to put that into action. So please, buy his book, the Return to Joy. It's got a dolphin on the front. It is, and when he talks about it being practical and easy to read, it is so that. It's and it also gives you steps to be able to implement what he's talking about today. So please go on Amazon or on his website and order Return to Joy. And thank you so much, everyone who listened. And remember, please pass on this information. We need you to be a messenger of love, be an angel, and let people know about this show, let people know about Andrew's work. If you'd like to contact me, you can contact me at 734-455-1438, or you could also go onto my website at barbarawhite.com. Thank you so much for taking this time, everyone, into doing the work that is so needed on the planet. And thank you for having the courage to go forward in love and having the courage to continue to devote your life, your body, your hands, your words to creation, God, the universe, because you matter. Your time spent listening to this, it matters, and your inner work matters, and if you're not realizing that by hearing everything that Andrew said, and there's nothing else I feel I can add to that, that it so matters, because without you, the world's incomplete. Without each person bringing forth their love and action and their gifts, the world is sick. And so we are the ointment, we are the medicine, and everything is already given within us to do that. And we just have to, as Andrew said, be brave and have the courage to go out there and do the things that we are being called to do, if we really admit it and really get quiet enough to admit what is breaking our heart, what is calling us forward. So thank you so much, everyone. Many blessings, and I will look forward to connecting with you all next month. Thank you for listening to Calling All Leaders and Healers.